From WNYC New York Public Radio, this is The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of our show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by DataPipe Managed IT Services, delivering a comprehensive suite of managed services, including implementing, securing, and scaling applications designed for mid-market and Fortune 1000 enterprises. DataPipe.com.
This project can be a development, again, that truly benefits the public and truly provides for affordable housing at a time when we have a crisis. And that is why I stand with the community, I stand with all of these law firms to challenge this injustice, and I will see you in court.
That was City Councilwoman Letitia James speaking at a press conference on the lawsuits challenging the Atlantic Yards development. It's from a new documentary called Brooklyn Matters. And as those lawsuits go forward, well, Atlantic Yards was in the news yet again last week because a 200-foot-long parapet fell from the former Ward Bread Bakery building. The work was stopped as the city investigates the accident. And this may be just a glitch in the progress of this massive development. We'll see. And Atlantic Yards, of course, is the big development project in Prospect Heights, Brooklyn. That would include 17 high-rise apartment buildings and office towers and a basketball arena for the Nets. But even after all the official approvals of this project up through the governor's office, it still does face those several lawsuits brought by advocacy groups, local legislators, and neighborhood residents and property owners. They still oppose what they contend is the vastly outsized scale of the development. The developers plan to use eminent domain to seize some properties and what they see as a behind-the-scenes approval process that they say cut out democracy. And as a sign that the opponents are not giving up, they are now screening around the city this new anti-Atlantic Yards documentary called Brooklyn Matters, made by independent filmmaker and city planner Isabel Hill. Among its most important arguments is that Atlantic Yards is not a done deal. So joining us this morning with some more clips from the film and to talk about the ongoing fight against Atlantic Yards is one of the city planning experts featured in the documentary. Ron Sheffman is a professor at the Graduate Center for Planning and the Environment, the Graduate Center for Planning and the Environment at the Pratt Institute and a former commissioner on the New York City Planning Commission. Professor Sheffman, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you for having me.
So first of all, for our listeners who have Atlantic Yards fatigue, after hearing about all your battles lost so far, this is not a done deal?
It's not a done deal. First of all, there are these three court cases that are wending their way through the courts, and we have to hear what comes out of it. And secondly, there is so much in this plan, as it's proposed, that flies in the face of the mayor's announced plan, New York City 2030, that we think perhaps both the governor and the mayor should take another look at this plan and really evaluate it as we go forward.
That's so interesting that you brought up 2030, because I was thinking about this, and, you know, we've reported extensively on the pros and the cons on this show, and we've had people from both sides all over the place. But my first reaction was that this is in line, at least on the surface, with the mayor's 2030 environmental vision, specifically more density around a major transit hub, which discourages the use of cars. Tell me why not.
Well, first of all, I'm a great believer in more density around transit hubs. However, density has its limits, and I think in this case, the density far exceeds the carrying capacity of both the transit network in the surrounding area, the platform space on the train and the subway stations, the carrying capacity of the environmental infrastructure and the social and cultural infrastructure that surrounds it. There are not enough daycare centers. There are not enough schools. There hasn't been enough thinking about really what is would make this a development project of 18,000 people really work.
But if we're going to have 9 million New Yorkers by 2030, as the mayor projects, then why isn't the answer to make sure the Atlantic Avenue subway station has the facility, build more schools, build more daycare centers? They're going to have to go somewhere.
I agree. And I think that's why Develop Don't Destroy Brooklyn and other groups that have been fighting the plan have never been against development. They really believe that it's important to deck over the 8 acres that now constitute the MTA rail yards. However, to tear down buildings that were recently renovated, that have both embodied energy in them, that were accommodating low and moderate income families, and displacing them in order to make way for this project is wrong. I think what we really need to do here is to build over those railways, do what the mayor's plan calls for, engage the surrounding communities in a way that enables that repair of the gash that runs through that neighborhood to weave the two neighborhoods that are separated by that gash together. And so I do think the mayor's approach is right, but it hasn't been the basis by which this plan evolved.
Before we hear a couple of clips from Brooklyn Matters, this new anti-Atlantic Yards documentary that you're in, you're not the filmmaker. Do you want to tell us something about the documentary? I presume you've seen it and know the filmmaker.
Oh, I've seen it quite a bit, and I know the filmmaker. I think it's important that to note it, that for a great period of time, people in this city did not know what the elements of the plan were. What motivated Isabel Hill to make the movie was really to explore what the elements of the plan were. People heard jobs and hoops, and nobody's against jobs and hoops. Nobody's against affordable housing. The real issue is how are we going about reaching that goal in this place. We're aborting the public processes. We are allegedly producing more affordable housing, but at the same time, according to South Brooklyn Legal Services and others, we'll be losing more affordable housing than we're going to be gaining. We're going to be gaining affordable housing that is far outside the income limits of the people who live surrounding this area. They're using regional area median incomes rather than borough median incomes. So as you explore this and as people learn more and more about the project, the opposition has been growing.
So here is Tom Angotti, a professor of urban planning at Hunter College, from the film Brooklyn Matters. He states here what is more or less the rallying cry of the film.
The myth that we are asked to believe that nothing can be done, that the train left the station and we better get on it. Well, that doesn't jibe with New York City history. Westway was a done deal. The West Side Stadium was a done deal. Lower Manhattan Expressway was a done deal. But none of them happened.
So that is the rallying cry of the documentary Brooklyn Matters, being used to try to continue the fight against the Atlantic Yards Development Project in Brooklyn Heights. And Ron Schiffman is my guest. He's the director of the Pratt Institute Center for Community and Environmental Development. And is that your biggest public relations hurdle at this point? The idea that you think the public feels it is over because there was a lot of press around the approval by the governor and various approvals up the chain?
That was the obstacle from the very beginning, because it was presented as a done deal the day it was announced. And I think in everybody's mind, including some of the present proponents, they felt it was a done deal and that what you needed to do was to negotiate a better community benefits agreements around it.
I will say that Mr. Ratner, the developer, came on this program just as it was being announced. And just as the first hints of public opposition started to surface, and he said on this show, oh, there is no opposition to this project. I'm paraphrasing now, there are a few unhappy people, but there is no significant opposition to the project. And that was his public statement on day one.
Well, the fact of the matter is that the various different community-based housing organizations around Brooklyn, the Pratt Area Community Council, the Fifth Avenue Committee, I've been a long-term affordable housing advocate, worked with ACORN from before they came into New York City, still work with them in New Orleans on the rebuilding of New Orleans. All of us have come out against this plan, and it's a really broad-based coalition concerned about it.
But it also does have a broad-based coalition for it. We've been through this a million times on this show with both sides, and, you know, it's got the thousands of much-needed housing units. You're saying there would be a net loss of affordable housing. They say a net gain. There's a deal with the city for 20% to be affordable. there are lots of jobs that they project. And we want to play a clip that is from your documentary that indicates some of the support. This is Bertha Lewis of the group Acorn and Marie Lewis, no relation, of a union group, Build.
A lot of people know us for housing because it is something that is fundamental to our membership.
What ended up happening was that the group sitting at the table each took parts of it. You know, Acorn took affordable housing. Build ended up taking the lead on workforce development.
So there are people who represent construction workers in the construction industry. Bertha Lewis of Acorn, well known for representing, you know, grassroots housing initiatives and employment initiatives. She's co-chair of the Working Families Party, for heaven's sakes. And they think this is good for the working people of Brooklyn.
Well, I happen to be a friend of Bertha Lewis's, and I have a great deal of respect for her. But sometimes friends can disagree. I think in this case, for instance, you know, the predecessor of Empire State Development Corporation, UDC, years ago under Governor Kerry, had a director, Richard Kahn. They mandated better job creation restrictions on their development projects than are in the community benefits agreement. We've been advocating for a long time with Acorn and with others that there be a 50% inclusionary requirement in the city. I don't deny that, and I think that's really important gains. The fact of the matter is that what Ratner is doing is he's diverting subsidies for affordable housing from other places, that if this project were properly planned, we could probably get more affordable housing. We could probably generate more jobs by taking the development project and dispersing it among three or four different developers so that we don't get the boredom and the large-scale project that's now being contemplated.
The collapse of the parapet at the construction site last week, did anyone get killed or injured?
Fortunately, nobody got killed or injured.
And scary as it is, these things happen in construction. So do you think this can be used as a wedge somehow to stop the project, or is that just a talking point?
Well, you know, there were the environmental impact statement pointed out that the building needed to be shored up, it needed to be repaired, that the parapet was a danger. And I haven't gone through all the legal documents or the processes, but apparently that was cleared. The scaffolding was recently removed. So there should have been some awareness that there was some difficulty. There was also demolition going on in the building. But I think it should also be pointed out that there were people evacuated from the surrounding buildings. The women and children that stood on the corner after that parapet fell were people who live in a shelter. And I want to point out that that shelter that was there because the community people opposed to this project fought to retain that shelter.
Let's take a few phone calls. People are calling in. Here is Raul in Brooklyn who says his block association joined one of these lawsuits against the development. Do I have that right, Raul?
That's correct.
And?
The point I want to make is that the neighborhood is really uniformly opposed to this project, and it's really only getting that word out to the rest of the city that is a challenge for us.
Right, but it's not uniformly opposed. I mean, maybe a certain part of
well,
the neighborhood
we
is,
we actually
right?
did a study of my block, uh-huh. and it was about 90-something percent opposed and 5% on the fence. I mean, and that was about a year ago. I would say it's probably gone up. I mean, as far as people on the street, there's very – you don't see anybody with signs saying bring Ratner into the neighborhood. If you go to the neighborhood – there's signs up saying people are opposed to it. There's mm-hmm. nobody who really is from the community. I mean, there's, you know, some people. I don't want to completely dismiss that. And there's certainly genuine concern for jobs and housing. And I totally support that. But as far as grassroots stuff goes, there's as far as I can see, very little mm-hmm. grassroots organization.
Right around the area among people who'd be directly affected. Raul, thank you. And Susan in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Susan.
Hi. I just want to support the opposition here and say that this undermining of democracy and of governance, meaning the public participation in these processes, is just rampant in the city now, and parents in the Department of Ed, you know, in the New York City public school system are experiencing the exact same thing that the Brooklynites are experiencing. even the same words are being used, small group, there's no opposition, it's just a small group of disgruntled parents, mm-hmm. when in fact we're going to have a rally on May 9th to show how many parents are upset about the DOE. But
That's good how you use this to go on to the issue that you wanted to talk about. But Susan, I appreciate it. And we're going to be doing a lot on governance of the New York City school system coming up toward the end of the school year. But Ron Schiffman, there is a fundamental complaint about how participation was handled and what this process says about democracy in New York, correct?
Absolutely. And, you know, if you make a mistake around an educational policy, you can correct it in the next administration. You make a mistake when you're building a project of this scale in Brooklyn, of 17 buildings of this enormity, it's there for the next century or more. And so I think we need to go, particularly when you're involved in such a large infrastructure and such a large development project, we need to have what are both transparent and participatory planning processes.
Except with all this organized opposition, and with as much as Atlantic Yards has been in the news for well over a year now, how would you say the public has not been able to participate?
Because they've not been involved in any of the levels of where the decisions are being made. It's one thing to have to go to the courts, but that's not the way planning
should
take place.
Because it's the state public authorities control board, which is basically the governor, the speaker, and the majority leader of the state government.
It's three men in a room. It was the MTA in less than 20 minutes that made a decision about the disposition of this property. It didn't come out of a planning process. You know, Atlantic Yards is an expansion of the Atlantic Terminal Urban Renewal Area. That project was 40 years. It's been practically built out. It was amended. It was amended 10 times. Each of the 10 times, it went through the city council. It went through the city planning commission. In this case, when there's the largest component, which would almost double the size of what happened up until this point, there is no discourse on a local level.
We just have a minute left, and you do have an alternative plan. You referred to it before, but your group is actually not for stopping a Nets arena altogether, not for having no office buildings and no residential towers. What do you want, real quick, and how different is it?
Well, first of all, we think the arena needs to be thought at. What's the best site for it in Brooklyn for the arena?
You want to see it at Coney Island or something, right?
I want to see it on Coney Island, and for my purposes, Atlantic, the demolition of the shopping center that Ratner owns and the arena built there would have been a win-win situation. But we want to see affordable housing built there. We want to see true open space, not courtyards of buildings being called open space. We want to make sure the streets remain open so that you can weave together both Prospect Heights and Fort Greene.
How many total apartments compared to theirs?
That I can't tell you at the moment. But I think in the long run, we would probably provide far more affordable housing than the 2,200 units that are being proposed.
Ron Schiffman from Pratt Institute. He is at their Graduate Center for Planning and the Environment, one of the featured speakers in the documentary Brooklyn Matters against Atlanta Yards. Is that at Brooklyn Matters?
It's Brooklyn Matters. You can go to the website, Brooklyn Matters. And if you want to support the lawsuit, go to DDDB.
Thanks for listening to The Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.